Welcome to the Cohort Sisters podcast, where we give voice to the stories, struggles, and successes of Black women and non-binary folks with doctoral degrees. I'm your host, Dr. Ijeoma McCullough, and today I'm joined by Dr. Tiffany Wiggins. Our guest today has over a decade of experience in higher education, is not only a practitioner and scholar, but also an advocate for transformative mentorship in Black communities. Dr. Wiggins earned her PhD in education leadership from Old Dominion University and is the founder and creator of Black Girl Mentor, a digital haven and community of practice dedicated to mentorship by and for Black women and girls, aka speaking my language. But her contributions don't stop there. As an ICF certified life and academic coach, Dr. Wiggins partners with individuals, groups, and organizations through her firm, Noir Coaching and Consulting, guiding them toward clarity and progress on their personal, professional, and academic journeys. Beyond her professional achievements, Dr. Wiggins is a proud mother and an enthusiast of travel, collecting denim jackets, and exploring new restaurants. So thank you so much for being here with us, Dr. Wiggins.
Yes, thank you. So happy to be here. I don't kind of have anything else to say. That intro was amazing. So thank you for having me.
So thanks so much for joining us today. I'd love to know a little bit about who you are outside of your accolades. Where are you from? Where do you currently live now? And what is with your obsession with denim jackets?
Honestly, I am just, I like to call myself a sister friend, right? Like I'm an introvert. So I like to spend a lot of time at home, but, or with, friends. As you mentioned before, I do enjoy traveling with, that could be solo, that could be with my sister, with family, or a nice girls trip. So that is me. I spend a lot of time with my daughter, who is, she'll be 12 in a couple of months and just entered middle school. So it's a very interesting time. So we spend a lot of time together learning about her world and me trying to navigate her through this world. So that is how I spend my time. You mentioned, I enjoy the fall, which is coming up. So that's really exciting. I am a denim jacket collector. So my daughter's always like, why do you have so many denim jackets? So I do that and love to spend time going to Target. So I probably go to Target multiple times a week, whether for a purpose or just to kind of be in the atmosphere. But yeah, that is me outside of my professional accolades.
Nice. Oh, a woman of my own heart. I love Target like so very much. So I'm curious, actually, you mentioned having a daughter who is about 12. How has being a mom and being a mother of a girl shaped your professional and personal passion for mentoring Black women and girls?
Yes. Oh, such a good question. Honestly, if it wasn't for her, I don't even know that I would have, if my mind would have been open to the path of mentorship, right? In terms of it being kind of a professional and purposeful passion for myself. Honestly, having my daughter and, even as a mother, before I even had her, knew that she was going to be a girl, I just knew I was a girl mom. I just had to have a daughter. And not for the frilly, and pink and bows and that sort of thing. I just felt so deeply connected to Black women and girls. So having her really opened my eyes up to the state of Black womanhood, to be very honest. And, the fact that I went natural was because, or back to natural, was because of my daughter, because I was raising her and she had this really thick, coily hair and I wanted to take care of it and I thought it was so beautiful, but because I've been raised, with relaxed hair for so long, it forced me to kind of learn what to do with it. And then I was like, why am I putting these chemicals in my hair? Let me change it for myself as well. So, it was that, or the decision to pursue a PhD, which led to, my passion for mentorship, which we can definitely talk about further. But it was knowing that I wanted to pursue the PhD and what that was going to mean for her and, my legacy, really is what pushed me through. As I was going through that process, she was very young, somewhere between, when I graduated with my PhD, she was 5. So she was pretty young, and even the decision to pursue the PhD at that time, I had to make the decision, do I take all this time and focus on this dissertation while she's young and she may not remember, or do I wait until she's a little bit older and a little bit more understanding? And I just knew that those older years as a young Black girl in this world, that I needed to be more present at that time. And I knew, I had a friend whose mom had also pursued a PhD when she was a little bit older. And there were some feelings about that, right? Like there was these memories that she had of her mom kind of really being in the dissertation phase and kind of not being as present as she would have liked her to be. And that kind of resonated with me a lot. And so that came into my parenting, you know, my decision, excuse me, to pursue it while she was much younger. But yeah, all of that. And then even my topic of my dissertation, looking at Black women in student affairs, because I'm like, I can't be going through this alone. What are other Black women going through? Because at the end of the day, this was all for her, right? I needed to be a good mom. I wanted to be a great professional. I needed to be a role model. And I wanted her to have other role models of Black women. So to really explore that all came from me being a mom to my daughter.
Yeah, I love that. And why I asked that question is because I recently had a second kid, and I was one of those people who, and I still kind of believe this, but I really was committed to like believing that like nothing would change having a boy and having a girl. But I will say, like, now that I have a little girl, I feel like my passion and my commitment for supporting, equipping, and encouraging Black women and Black girls is like tenfold now that I have one of my own. So I appreciate your reflection and, you know, your description of how integral your daughter was to your academic journey, to your professional journey, and really to kind of cultivating who you are as a scholar practitioner. So I love that. I love that. I'm right there with you. Let's kind of wind back. What made you pursue a doctoral degree? Why were you interested in pursuing one in the first place? How did you get interested in educational leadership? Like, why kind of pick that path to pursue as a course of study?
Yeah. So my professional background as a higher ed professional practitioner administrator came from my own journey as going to college, right? So I was joke that you don't know about this profession unless you go to college. So as an undergrad, really got connected to campus life, was very involved. I went to a small liberal arts college in Virginia, so that allowed me to be very close to administration, be very close to kind of, you know, decisions that were being made regarding student life. Some of the senior leaders, you know, really gravitated towards me and I connected with. So at that point, I kind of made the decision like, oh, higher ed, you know, kind of taking this path is for me. And I just, it resonated very well with me. I understood it from a business standpoint. And political standpoint. And so that was just something that I naturally gravitated to. And I think once you're in that environment and not looking at it from the lens of a student, but from, you know, an administrative standpoint, like I said, a political, social, all of these concepts coming together, pursuing the PhD or getting a terminal degree just seems like something you're supposed to do, right? And a lot of people around you have them. And as I'm looking at, okay, well, what's next? You know, my professional journey, I'm seeing PhD as, you know, one of those criteria, sometimes required, sometimes preferred. But as I continue to explore the profession, I recognize that, okay, yes, this is helpful perhaps to get a job here, but also this opens doors to being able to do other things, right? To be able to teach, to be able to really, you know, gain credibility in writing a book. To be a consultant, to do all of these things that really resonated with me, was very appealing to me. So that's kind of where the seed was planted in terms of getting the PhD. Initially, so my master's degree is actually in human resource development, because at that point I wasn't quite sure if higher ed was the path for me. I knew I loved it, but no one outside of higher ed understood it. And so when I have family and friends, I'm like, what is this degree? What are you talking about? So I kind of felt some pressure to take a more general approach to my master's degree. But so I got a master's in HRD, but then as I'm going through that journey, I really was like, no, this is where I need to go. This is where I need to be. And I didn't want to get a second master's degree And I was able to find an EBS program or a postmaster's program in higher education. So it was the next step up, but wasn't a second master's degree. So it kind of was a good hybrid opportunity for me to explore doctoral level work without the pressure of the dissertation at that point, but also allowed me to take jobs on within the field that I would still be eligible for. So, long story short, go through my EDS program in higher education. That, of course, allows me to work in the field. Fast forward, I'm in Washington, D.C., working in a student affairs and academic affairs capacity. That particular university, George Washington University, which is where I have my master's from, I applied for the PhD program there. I was there. I was not a mom at that point, and I was like, you know what? They're here. They're going to pay for the majority of the degree. Let me go ahead and apply and see what happens. I apply for the program there, do my interview, I get accepted, and then a few months later, I do find out I'm going to be a mom, which I was like, okay, oh, we'll figure it out, and I end up having to go on bed rest halfway through on my way to starting the program that summer. So I was like, okay, well, we'll defer a year. Defer a year now, I'm a mom to a newborn, and I'm like, there's no way I can handle a PhD at this point. And so I defer another year. And then at that point, my daughter's father and I decided to move back home to Virginia to be around family because we were the only ones there to move. So to be closer to family, have more support. So I just kind of gave up GW for a while, started working at Old Dominion University. Which again, that was where I got my EDS from. I learned that I was able to transfer a lot of those credits into the PhD program. They were going to pay for some of those credits. So I said, okay, once I kind of got my bearings in my new position, being back home, I went ahead and applied again to that program, got in, and it was kind of, game on from there.
Wow. Okay. What a journey. What a journey. I'm curious. Okay. So because you were, I always find it interesting when I speak to people who work in higher ed and then pursue a doctoral degree, because I think sometimes the thought process around like which schools to go to is like oftentimes it can be really embedded into like I work here and so I'm gonna go here because they're gonna pay for me. Or
Correct.
and like they also have a really good program, so that's like definitely part of it as well. But was there a part of you that kind of felt, was there ever a part or ever a moment where you kind of felt like, okay, I got pregnant, I had to defer another year, like let me just like never mind, kind of like what made you continue with the idea and with the dream to pursue the PhD even after a couple of pauses, let me call them pauses, not interruptions, but pauses to what you thought the journey was going to look like.
Definitely. That's a great question, and definitely a pause. I think once I made up my mind that I was going to pursue a PhD, then I was going to do it by any means necessary. And I think there were other factors that I had to consider to determine when that was going to happen. So I'd mentioned before the age of my daughter, having support, geographic location, program. And I was lucky to, be accepted into two great programs, even though they were the institutions in which I was working at that particular time. Because to be honest, if it wasn't a great program, even if I was working there and if it was cheaper, I probably wouldn't have applied, right? I probably would have waited until a better time or figured out, what made more sense. You mentioned the piece about working at the institution in which you pursue your doctorate, and in some ways, it does feel like I didn't have the same experience as other doctoral students. And what I mean by that is, having worked in higher education, having worked with doctoral students, and still do to this day, and even helping them to apply to programs or consider the decision to pursue a PhD or EdD, I see that journey, right? They're looking at these different programs, they're visiting the campuses, they're talking to different faculty, they're trying to figure out who aligns with their research interests, right? And for me, I didn't necessarily have that same experience because it was so tied to, like I said, those factors that I mentioned before. I feel like it all worked out in the way it was supposed to, but sometimes I do wish I had that experience. So yes, in some ways the pauses, I kept going because I knew I wanted to, but luckily, by some sort of, I don't know, divine alignment, it all came together the way it was supposed to.
Yes, awesome. So let's talk about your time in the program. What was your experience with finding mentors, both faculty mentors and peer mentors?
Yes. So again, journey was a little bit different because I was working there too. So a lot of especially the faculty within the program, I kind of knew them from a professional standpoint. Like, I worked within student affairs, the higher ed program or the educational leadership program, worked very closely together. So I was very connected to the faculty in that way. And then also because I completed the EDS there too. So some of those faculty were still there. And I had relationships and knew them from before. So there was this, kind of pseudo faculty mentorship that would happen, but more so from like, I know you and we want to make sure you get through this program. I think where the mentorship really came in for me, it came through me, I was for me and through me. I had connected when I worked at George Washington University. I got connected to a faculty member, administrator. I would consider her really my first kind of mentor professionally, Dr. Joelle Carter, Davis Carter. And she just really took me under her wing, and not in the sense of like, let me help you with this dissertation, but let me open you up to all the pieces of being a Black woman, doctoral, PhD holder. And one of the first things she did, not only helping me, get a job in the field, but also like opening me up to like going to conferences, right? She was like, okay, this conference has a call for programs. I've been going to this conference forever. I've been, presenting here, but come on, we're gonna do it together. I'm gonna let you take the lead. Like, and it was just so magical. And I was like, oh, like I just never even would have thought to do that. And ironically enough, our first presentation together was about being a Black woman in the doctoral journey. And I continued to present on that topic for many conferences thereafter. So that was really who kind of started, like, opened my eyes up to what mentorship for Black women in this space looked like for me. She did not work at Old Dominion, which is where I was working and pursuing my PhD at the time. She was very much connected to people at ODU, but for what it was is that she really poured into me in who I was becoming, as an academic, as this professional, as this PhD holder. So that is where it started. And then I also had other Black women in my life who I was kind of, now that I was like opened up to the idea of mentorship, there were other Black women around who I also was like, oh, you're pouring, like noticed that they were pouring into me into different ways. And to note, I think also, because I was working full time, I was in this PhD full time, I was mother of this young child. I don't know that my eyes were always super open to what was happening around me. So when I had these moments where I'm like, oh, this Black woman is like asking me about like how things are going or how they can support me, I started to see mentorship for what it was. And it was honestly through those interactions. And some negative ones too, if I'm going to be very transparent, where there was some opportunity where I felt like there were some Black women who probably were in position to support me, and chose not to or didn't for whatever reason. So all of those experiences together really kind of pushed me to want to explore mentorship for Black women even more. And then for me also to be more of a mentor, an intentional mentor. Not only to like, the younger students out on the campus or younger graduate students, but to my peers. So I just kind of started to embrace that and become very aware of what it means to be a mentor, especially a peer mentor, to my colleagues, to my friends, and then that kind of again poured into my dissertation topic.
So I think it's really interesting that your really strong experiences with Black women mentors and some of the experiences that you had where you expected maybe or anticipated mentorship and didn't receive that kind of mentorship shaped your research and professional and personal interest in Black women's mentorship and mentorship of Black women and girls. I'd love to know, especially since you started kind of so early in your doctoral journey, studying the topic and presenting on the topic, can you talk about what your dissertation ended up being and then how your dissertation study informed the work that you continue to do today?
Yes. So, you know, as I mentioned before, going through all of these life events, right? At the same time, really, you know, kind of drove me to the decision to pursue the PhD, but then also while I was in it, trying to kind of help me frame what my topic was going to be. And initially I was looking at kind of the intersection or something regarding like the professional and the personal intersections of Black womanhood, right? Like how do those things come together? What does that look like? It was about women of color. That's what it was. And my committee said, no women of color, that's too much. Pick a side, essentially, right? But fire was burning me regarding mentorship. And I think because I was having this like real life, real time, these experiences that were kind of like polar opposites of one another, right? I'm having these amazing mentorship moments on one side and then others where I'm like, what is happening? Like, this doesn't make any sense. So I really wanted to explore that because I was trying to find out, was this just me or were other Black women, especially within student affairs, like what was their life looking like? How were they experiencing mentorship? And that is what led to my dissertation study, which was, this is a mouthful, but my title is An Interpretive Phenomenological Analysis of the Lived Experiences and Mentor Relationships of Black Women Student Affairs Administrators. So long story short is I was exploring what the lives and the mentor relationships of Black women who work in student affairs, what did that look like? And of course, I knew my own personal experience, but I really wanted to find out what did that look like for others, for my colleagues, for people who worked at other institutions. So that is what I ultimately ended up studying. And through that study, learned that yes, there were some of the participants who had very similar experiences as myself, and then others, of course, that looked a little differently. But some of the themes that came out of that exploration was that I think a couple that stand out the most was this idea of being this hyper awareness of self. So as Black women working in student affairs, even though it may feel like a more liberal field and profession, that we still feel like we have to, you know, prep before we send an email, before we, depending on where we're going on campus on that particular day, how we're going to dress, how we're wearing our hair for a presentation versus a, you know, being in the office all day. How do we present ourselves when we're in certain meetings? So there was just this hyper fixation around, you know, who we are, how do we present ourselves? So that definitely came up. And then with mentorship, there was this deep desire for Black women or Black women student affairs administrators, for them to have mentorship, not just by another woman, but particularly from Black women. But there were a lot of challenges that they faced in being able to receive that mentorship. Whether that was there just weren't any Black women around them at their institution, in their, you know, respective communities, in their department, or what have you, that were available to them as a you know, who could serve as a mentor. Sometimes they would enter into new roles, new schools, what have you, and maybe their supervisor was a Black woman. And they were excited about the possibilities of mentorship there, but that person, because they probably were the only one before, or they had so much on their plate that they didn't have capacity or desire to be a mentor to that person. So those are kind of two big things that stood out. And then also the idea of having to kind of negotiate your life regarding those personal and professional pursuits. As a Black woman, you're not just, you know, if you do have children or you're taking care of maybe family members or what have you, you know, those are other things that you have to consider. Also working in a profession where it's not always just 9 to 5, you know, there's a lot of nights, a lot of weekends, that you have to dedicate your time to. So how do you negotiate that? Or being connected to your community where, you know, maybe you are the parent on the block where all the kids come to after school, or your child is, you know, part of the football team and you're the team mom or whatever, right? But there was always feeling like there's this negotiation of time, but also the desire to pursue these professional goals, but at what cost? So some of those things came out of the research. But of course the piece regarding mentorship really stood out to me because it provided some validation that I was not going through it alone, but that there were so many Black women who were just kind of getting through the day, getting through the academic year, you know, just kind of getting on to get on, and not really recognizing that there was, the opportunity and there were these benefits of mentorship that they weren't necessarily getting. They wanted them so bad, whether or not they named it as such, but they wanted these things and they wanted it particularly from Black women, but that they weren't able to get it and thus weren't able to reap the benefits from it. So all of that sparked. So of course, you know, I finished a dissertation, I presented, I became Dr. Wiggins. But what kind of like started up in me was this idea of like, we need to talk more so about Black women and mentorship, that we need a space for, you know, more articles and more literature to be created on the topic, because there was definitely a dearth as I was creating my literature review. But also we need to have more conversations about it. Black women, A, need to be more aware of the benefits of mentorship, where to find mentorship. And then those who were also felt like they were those who were in a space to be able to provide mentorship for Black women, taking into consideration the nuance of their life, the dynamic nature of Black women, that there needed to be more conversation around that, more tools and resources put into that conversation. So as a result of that, I created a platform, community of practice called Black Girl Mentor, that really centers the power, the purpose, the practice of mentorship specifically for Black women and girls.
Okay. Thanks so much for sharing how your dissertation research really tied into the work that you do and the work that you are pursuing. I would love to know just like what one high point of your doctoral journey was and like what was a low point. So like one of the main successes and then one of the main challenges that you experienced.
Yeah. So some of the challenges that I experienced during my dissertation journey was, I think time, of course, was a big one. Trying to balance, you know, being a mom, being a full-time professional, you know, being a full-time professional, part of the way I was in a partnership and then half of the way that partnership ended. So also managing that. And I think it's important to mention that. I know people are like, why are you hearing that part? But I do think that is really important because the dissertation journey, it takes up so much of your time, your energy, your motivation, right? And when you're kind of managing all of these other major life events at the same time, it does impact your ability to finish that process. So all of those things are happening at the same time. And especially once I got into the actual dissertation phase where I was no longer taking classes and it was all for me, right? To kind of get this thing going. It became even more important for me to create a schedule and a calendar that worked. Finding time to write could be really challenging. I was very fortunate that the offices that I worked in, there were other people who were pursuing PhDs, even in leadership. So they were very understanding of what I was going through. I knew the work that I was doing very well. So I was very efficient with getting my work done. And then if I needed to take some time off to go write or go to the library, I would take advantage of that. But I would say time definitely, or managing time, was definitely a big challenge. And then also feeling present for my daughter, who, like I mentioned before, was pretty young at the time. I remember having to learn that I cannot do anything regarding this dissertation while she's still awake. When she was younger, I would think, oh, okay, she's like watching a movie or she's watching a show. I can get a few pages written. And something about that laptop opening up where she just became laser focused and it was all about me. And I would get so frustrated. And I was like, you know what? It's not worth it. It's not worth getting frustrated. She's a baby, you know, so let's just reorganize. So when she's awake, then we're present. When she goes down to sleep, then that is when you do your work. And that's kind of how I had to do it. Just to, again, make sure I was being a present mom, but also getting my work done. So those are probably the biggest challenges. In terms of my committee, I would say I had a pretty great committee. Again, being on campus with the department, I think that made things very helpful. So if I needed to run over and talk to my chair, that wasn't really too much of an issue. A lot of times he would walk over and check in on me, which was really nice. And I know that is not the experience of many doc students, but so there I didn't have too much of a challenge. I would say just time really was the biggest one for me.
So after you finish your doctoral program, what were some of the things that you did before you decided to start your consulting business? And I'm asking because, you know, we've had workshops in the cohort sisters community before, and there are lots of people who are really interested in consulting and interested in coaching, and really being able to use their research and scholarship in other ways. And so I would love if you could just share a couple of the steps that you took to create your coaching and consulting business.
Yeah. To be very honest, it kind of happened. It wasn't intentional. I'll say that, right? Like, it wasn't a plan where I was like, once I finish this PhD, I'm going to do XYZ for a couple of years, and then I'm going to start a consulting business. It didn't quite happen that way. Immediately following me completing my dissertation and graduating with my PhD, I stayed working at the same institution for a little bit. And then, and I also took on, I was really fortunate to be able to get an adjunct professor role the following semester after graduating. Just some circumstances within the department allowed that opening to happen. So I also took on some, you know, took on that role as well, but stayed with that institution for about another year, about a year and a half. My supervisor at the time, probably a couple months later, was abruptly retiring. She was like, oh, I'm retiring. And we had, our office was very much responsible for a huge initiative happening over the summer. So I kind of had to step in as interim and lead that office for about 8 to 9 months. And wow. Unfortunately, when the actual position went on to be, you know, posted, I was not selected. So that kind of was like, okay, writing's on the wall, time to go. So I know. Yeah. So,
okay,
you know,
wow.
black women at work, right? So, but yeah, let that work for flawlessly, might I add, for quite some time, for a little less than a year. And then, you know, went up for the position and was not granted that position. So, and because I'm always like, nothing is guaranteed. So I kind of started putting some feelers out myself and some other opportunities. So by the time they hired the new person, I was pretty much on my way out the door for another opportunity at another university in another state. So I stayed at that university for about a year, and then I left to come to another university here in North Carolina. So right now, I mentioned before, I'm from Virginia, but currently based in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I've been here about 4 years. So came here for a director level role here at a university, and stayed there for about a year and a half. So through that, I'm like, okay, I'm starting to have feelings about, okay, what do I want to do with this higher ed career? I had some friends who worked in like tech and other industries that were like, you need to come over here, there's opportunities for you. And I'm like, what am I gonna do outside of higher ed? This is all I know, right? I'm like, I've been, you know, raised in this profession. And so I really was trying to negotiate all of that. Like, what does that look like? And like I said, stayed there for about a year and a half. Opportunity presented itself at a tech company that allowed me to work with institutions of higher education, but also in a with mentoring programs. So it was kind of everything came together. And because there's a lot of, well, there is research around the impact of mentorship and student success, and as well as, you know, retention and persistence and all of these pieces, it still allowed me to tap into the scholarly parts of me, right? So I'm doing this, I'm in this new environment at Tech, but I'm also doing research around it. I'm still connected to higher education. So things were looking out for me. And in that, I'm like, okay, like, you can do this, right? Like, you don't have to stay in one space. You're gaining all these skills and experiences. And then I decided to pursue becoming a credentialed coach. So I took on a coach training course. That took a few months. And then there's some other requirements that you have to do before you get your credential. You're certified initially, but it takes a while to actually get the coaching credential. But through that, I'm like, oh, there is an opportunity to scale your work and to have great impact, and not just work one-to-one. You know, you can work one-to-one with students or people in the community or what have you. So it really opened my eyes up to starting this this coaching and consulting business. So I kind of just took everything that I knew and was doing already. People were already reaching out to me about certain things anyway. So I was like, well, let me just like legitimize this and put it into a business. And then as I began to learn more about the coaching industry, started to, of course, put some of those business practice into play. Very much so started out as a side hustle. So let me be very clear about that. I didn't just like take the leap and like, you know, leave my job initially. Started out very much as a side hustle, and then continued to work in ed tech for 2.5 years. And then earlier this year, I left that position in that organization and went full time into the business. So that's kind of how that journey was, a little bit of a windy road, but all things lead to greatness, I guess.
Yes, and congratulations on going full time this year. That is, I feel like that's so many people's dream, or it's a lot of people's dream, and to be able to actually realize it and to do so in a way that, you know, to me felt really organic. Like the journey was, it, you know, pieces just kind of built upon each other, despite, you know, the very shadiness of you not getting that position, but it was all for the better because you're now able to do your own thing and to use your scholarship and your research and your expertise in the way that you want to, and not in the way that someone else wants you to. So I'm glad everything worked out. So as we wrap up our discussion today, we'd like to ask all of our guests on the Cohort Systems podcast two final questions. One is, if you had to do your doctoral journey all over again for some very strange reason, what is one thing that you would do differently?
Yeah. Probably one thing I would say this, but I would hire an editor. And I know that sounds very small and like, what? But even in all the life experiences that was happening and kind of, you know, pushing me one way or the other, I honestly wouldn't take that back. Like, I think that was what I needed at the time. But when I think back to, you know, that time, it would be hire an editor. And the reason why I say that is because there is a typo on my first page of my dissertation, and it drives me bonkers anytime someone tells me, I read your dissertation, which is such an honor, right? Like, I get these emails every now and then, or text messages, and people are like, oh my God, I came across your work. And it's so great. But then in my mind, I'm like, did they see the typo? Like, so, of course, I looked over it a million times. But when you're looking at the same words all, you know, all the time, you miss things, right? And I had other people look at it too, but for whatever reason, you know, of course, once it was published, I go back and look through it, and it, you know, is staring at me in the face. So all that to say, invest in an editor so that you don't have to, then you have to have that experience that I'm having. And that also means don't go looking at my dissertation to find the type, to find the type of.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, my dissertation also has typos in it. And I actually I not only have a typo, I have a sentence that like just doesn't finish. It just like ends midway. It makes no sense whatsoever. So I completely feel you. But you know what's most important is that it's done. It's done. It was behind
Done.
us, even if it's not perfect. But yeah, I also have my dissertation is riddled with typos and like I don't know what page that sentence is on. No one else has talked about it, but I know there's a random unfinished sentence
Yeah, no
in
one's
my
done anything to me
dissertation.
either. But I know. But yeah,
Okay,
but
so
we
what
are
is
both
what?
doctors, so
Yeah,
we're
so
good
what?
now.
We are, and that is what matters. That's, at the end of the day, that is all that matters. So, what is one final piece of advice that you have for current or prospective Black women and non-binary folks who are working on getting their doctoral degree, thinking about getting their doctoral degree? What's some one last piece of advice that you have for them?
This may sound very cliche, but I wholeheartedly believe please know your why before taking on this decision. The doctoral journey is arduous and it's long and it's purposeful, of course, right? But it takes up so much of who you are and who you are to your family, to your community, and it has to be a very intentional decision. And so, you know, because I want a doctor in front of people to call me doctor, or because I don't know, like just know like why you are doing it and not think about the kind of superficial reasons why, you know, someone may want a PhD or EdD or doctoral degree. I tell people come to me all the time, like, I'm thinking about a PhD, or I'm thinking about, you know, pursuing my doctorate, like, can we talk? And I'm like, yes. And I'm like, why do you want to do this? And especially because a lot of people are coming from the higher ed field where it feels like this natural, this is what I'm supposed to do sort of thing. And the reality is that in terms of needing a PhD in many fields, it's not necessary, right? Like just be very, you know, so if it is pertinent to your field, then yes, I get it. Like you have to do what you have to do. But being mindful of that. And I think it's important to really consider that because, again, it's taking time from yourself, it's taking time from your family, perhaps your children. I always say if someone is partnered, like, talk to your partner about that decision because it's going to affect them just as much as it affects you. If your children are old enough and to understand, talk to them as well about how their life is going to change too while you're going through this and that you're going to need support through that. So ensuring that you have the support through that. But it is not a small decision to make. It is huge, and make sure that you can kind of be able to identify what is the end goal of me getting this PhD. You know, I find a lot of times, particularly for Black women, as we all know, the statistics say, you know, Black women are the most educated, and you know, that's a great, you know, accolade to have and statistic. However, a lot of times that is kind of tied into, hate to say it, but trauma, right? Like because we don't want to feel like we, you know, no one can take it away from us, or we have to prove ourselves over and over again, right? And if that's kind of what is at the core of your decision, then I just ask that you really think through, why am I doing this? Because you are enough just as you are, and if you pursuing a PhD is for you to for someone to validate that in you, then like it's really not worth it. So that would be my last thing, my last piece of advice regarding, particularly for prospective doctoral students, like really think through why am I doing this?
Wow, such great advice. Thank you so much, Dr. Wiggins, for joining us on the Cohort Sisters podcast, for sharing your journey to the doctoral degree, and for giving, especially as you mentioned, for prospective students or even students who are kind of early on in the journey and kind of thinking through, why am I here? You know, make sure that you actually take the time to figure out why you're pursuing your doctoral degree and make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons. I think that is completely invaluable advice. So thank you so much again for sharing your story and your journey with us.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It's so great to be here.
Thank you again for listening to this week's episode of the Cohort Sisters podcast. If you are a Black woman interested in joining the Cohort Sisters membership community, or you're looking for more information on how to support or partner with Cohort Sisters, please visit our website at www.cohortsisters.com.
You can also find us on all social media platforms at Cohort Sistas. Don't forget to subscribe to the Cohort Sistas podcast and leave us a quick review wherever you're listening. Thank you so much for joining us this week, and we'll catch you in next week's episode.